This is the NFL Draft Preview Show on 98.5, The Sports Hub, presented by UMass Lowell. Discover their fast-track summer courses. Now, here's the voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy, and former Patriot, Ted Johnson.
And hello again, everyone. A very pleasant good morning, and welcome into our Town Fair Tire Studios, and welcome to our first edition of the NFL Draft Preview Show here in 2019 on 98.5 The Sports Hub. You heard Mike O'Brien on the headlines. You know that Ted Johnson is alongside, and it's good to be here with him and with you as we look forward to the NFL Draft. Of course, round one, now less than 3 full weeks away, 3 weeks from this past Thursday. The Pats will be on the clock with the number 32 pick overall if they use that pick, Ted, or perhaps they'll trade up, trade out. We'll see what they do. And let's get started with the state of the Pats and the state of this show. We're going to do things a little differently. Last few years, we've dived in immediately with interviews and guests, but we're going to have a chance to tell some stories and talk a little bit about the Pats draft picks of the past, including your 95 class, and as well look at what the Patriots are going to look for. And when you look at the state of the Pats right now, some significant holes on the roster, but they've got a lot of ammo going into the draft. A dozen picks, three of the top 64, six of the top 101. So as we get started, where do you think they should get started?
Yeah, well, Bob, first off, it's a pleasure to work with you. I'm a big fan of yours. I listen to you and Zoe all the time. And so it's this is fun that we get to do this for the next few Sundays, for sure. You know, I think the most thing is that you got to look at is, like, what was who exited the team? Who is now not on the team? And then what kind of production are they leaving behind? And so if you look at the offensive side of the ball, clearly I think the biggest losses are going to be on that side of the ball. And so I just kind of looked at the lost production on offense. You know, you got Rob Gronkowski retiring. You got Josh Gordon. He's a question mark. Not sure what his status is going to be, even though he played, I think, in 11 games last year and did very well, I think, all things considered. You just don't know what his future holds here. Chris Hogan has moved on. Cordell Patterson has moved on. Obviously, Dwayne Allen has moved on. If you add all those guys up, okay, all those guys up production as far as receptions, yards, touchdowns. That's 146 catches that are out the door, 2,208 yards that are out the door, and 12 touchdowns that are out the door. That's a lot of production that is now out the door. So I think that's going to probably be the main focus is probably kind of backfilling. You know, obviously, the two most glaring needs are wide receiver and tight end. A lot of people, and I'm kind of on the fence with this, Bob. A lot of people think that this is the year that you need to go get a successor to one Tom Brady. And so, you know, I have thoughts on that we can get to later on. But so it's going to be interesting to see where they go. But obviously, offense is where I think the biggest holes are. Defense, you have a lot of guys coming back. I mean, the biggest guys that maybe that are not going to be here, obviously Trey Flowers is the first name that comes to mind. Malcolm Brown never really, I think, lived up to what his first-round billing was. Danny Shelton and Adrian Claiborne are all gone. I mean, the biggest one that you got to replace is Trey Flowers. Michael Bennett trade maybe is kind of what's going to make that taste a little bit better. But clearly it's the offensive needs, and particularly wide receiver, tight end, positions that need to be addressed in this draft.
I think when you talk about the losses for the Patriots, not as significant as the players, of course, because it's always about the players, but the coaching staff too. And in particular, I'm curious how this draft process has gone for them, because typically in the past we would see Bill maybe at NC State working out Chubb and the other defensive linemen with Brendan Daly alongside. Well, Brendan Daly is now coaching in Kansas City. Brian Flores would go out and help evaluate. Patriots use their coaches to get out there on the scouting trail and watch prospects firsthand. But now Brian, of course, is the head coach in Miami, and he took with him Chad O'Shea, the longtime wide receivers coach here. Jerry Shaplinsky, who worked a lot with the young quarterbacks that they brought in the last few years, is in Miami. Josh Boyer, et cetera. So there's been a lot of turnover on the coaching staff. Nice to know you still have Dante Scarnecchia to help evaluate those offensive line prospects.
So true. No one's better.
But I'm curious, too, like how that complicates or challenges the pass, especially now that Greg Schiano is no longer in the plans, in the mix as the defensive play caller.
Yeah, it's a great point. I look, a lot of people are saying, you know, hey, all these coaches, Bill figures it out. Yeah, he always does. I mean, obviously, this is unparalleled success that you've seen, and you see coaches come and go. But my goodness, I think some of the maybe the biggest names to leave were after my last year, after the 04 season,
right,
with Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel leaving those staff, and they seem to figure it out pretty quick. But you're right. I think the coaches do add a lot into how they evaluate these prospects, but they have a huge scouting department too. So there's a lot of guys, names that people aren't familiar with, that don't have the title of coach, but that are in their scouting department, in their college scouting department, that just do this year round. So there's tons of information on all these prospects. And even though maybe they don't have the coaches on the staff to go out there and see them, they have scouts out there that are evaluating these guys for sure.
Next few weeks, Ted, we're going to talk more about individual players coming out in this year's draft class who might be targets for the Pats if they're available. But from your experience, firsthand, having played under Bill and having watched this team for many years from afar in Houston, or now this past season up close, what do they look for?
Yep.
In a future Patriot coming out in the draft?
Yeah. You know what, Bob? I think there's one of my favorite expressions that someone said to me years ago about keeping a job in the NFL. He says there's two ways. And I think it was my former strength coach, I love him, Johnny Parker, from Mississippi, unmistakable accent from Mississippi. But Johnny would say, Ted, there's two ways to keep a job. You're either pretty good at a few things or you dominate at one thing. And Bill loves guys that are pretty good at a few things, guys that have versatility. Now, I think you hear the term versatility, the word versatility all the time. And people, I don't know if they exactly understand why that's so important. But take, for instance, my former teammate, Teddy Bruschi. Teddy Bruschi was a dominant pass rusher in college, okay? He might at that time, and he still might lead the NCAA in sacks, okay, with Derek Thomas at 52. I could be wrong on maybe he's still maybe not the leader, but I think he is. Point is, not only could Teddy rush the passer, he could cover, and he could play, run too. So that versatility allows a coach to play that player in a multiple sets and positions, and it can create confusion for the opposing offense. So if you can have guys that can play inside, outside, rush the passer, drop, do different types of things, it creates it's very confusing for an offense. It's very hard to game plan. If you don't know what that player is doing from play to play, it creates a lot of difficulty. So that's what Belichick is doing. And that's also, there's value in that. Whenever if you can pay one guy to do two guys' jobs or three guys' jobs, then you have a very valuable player on your hand. And that's what they look for. And if you're not a versatile player, I was not, then you better be really good at one thing. And so those are the two things that kind of separate you from keeping a job or not keeping a job in the NFL.
Versatility, I imagine, means not only being athletically versatile, but you better have the intelligence to grasp a lot of the different concepts they want you to go out and execute.
You know, Bob, it's amazing to me how, my favorite expression, and we hear it time and time again, and it was, I don't know if it was coined by my boy Mike Vrabel, but he was the first one I ever heard say it. Bill Belichick's playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers. And so what happens is nobody knows how to scout an opponent quite like Bill Belichick. And so whenever you have all this information on an opponent, and you have all this data and all this information, and he can whittle it down to the player so that you know what you need to do in these certain – what they like to do in these certain situations, you have, like, coaches out on the field. So you better have a very high football IQ if you're going to survive in this system, because he changes calls from week to week. Most coaches can't do that because the players can't mentally handle that extra kind of workload mentally. And so he puts so much on his players mentally to be able to adapt, to adjust from week to week what the calls are based on what the offense is doing.
You mentioned Mike Vrabel. I think you look at Mike, Matt Patricia, you look at their GMs as well, Bob Quinn, of course, John Robinson, yeah, not in that order, Quinn with Patricia in Detroit and Robinson with Vrabel. You've got Chris Greer now in Miami, of course, as the GM with Brian Flores. So you have a lot of people off that Belichick tree.
Tons, yeah.
They're going to be picking in this draft, too. And we've seen it in free agency, Ted, especially with the Titans the last couple of years, and Trey Flowers this year with the Lions. There are guys who think alike, and I would imagine look for those same traits we're talking about in their future players, and that's more competition for the kind of guys who are on the Patriots' radar.
Yeah, that's true. Imagine. You know, it's funny, and I mean, you can almost see an example of that, Bob, is as far as kind of what these former coaches that are now head coaches or position coaches around the league are doing to maybe poach free agents that the Patriots were going after. Brian Daboll in Buffalo, who did he go out and get? A guy that the Patriots wanted, Cole Beasley. You know, what did Mike Vrabel, Adam Humphries?
Yes.
He went out and got an Adam Humphries, you know, because he knows that that's a kind of player that fits in the Patriots system, and they want to have a similar system, if they can, of the New England Patriots. So you're absolutely right. So all these guys know kind of how the Patriots think, and they know what the formula for success is here, and they're all trying to duplicate that. So I think that's a great point. You're going to see a lot of these front office people and these coaches that used to be under the Belichick tree drafting players that Belichick, you know, also likes.
Those guys, like Bill, have certainly moved up and down the draft board the last couple of years, and with 12 picks, you can't imagine that Belichick and the Patriots are going to use all 12 of those draft choices. So one has to assume that the Patriots are going to make some moves. How much do you think for them, and I guess we'll get into that when we talk about, you know, for example, whether quarterback really is a position that they will address in this draft, how much are they influenced by need to want to go up and get a player? Or do you think it's more about the player that's available, that could be available to them, that Bill has a liking for a particular player, and that's what he's going to go after, as opposed to saying, you know, I got to find another offensive tackle. I got to find a rush defensive end.
Yeah, I think he just, if he likes the guy, he'll go get him. Yeah. I don't think he wants to have the board dictate necessarily what decisions he makes. If he just likes the guy, and even though there might not be a need for that player at that position, I just can't see him passing that guy up. I think he's going to take who he likes when that pick comes up. And, you know, it's very interesting. I've kind of thought, Bob, that maybe with the 12 picks that he has, he'll package two or three of these and maybe go get somebody in a trade, in particular the wide receiver position. Why the wide receiver position, Ted? Because I think that position is one of those positions, Bob, that Bill Belichick looks at and goes, I need a seasoned guy. I need a guy, a rookie wide receiver in this system is not going to give me what I need in the first year or two. It takes time. So he likes those guys that are 3, 4, 5 years into their career. So I just wonder if there's going to be a trade that he's going to make for a receiver on one of these other teams that's got 3, 4, 5 years in him that's already seasoned. That he'll go get.
I wonder the same, and I think we can ask Jeff Howe about that, because I'm sure he thinks the same way. I know he's written about that position for them, and his assumption, if I'm correct, is that they're not done. And that's the thing about Belichick, too. Roster building doesn't end after the draft or when the training camp starts. Roster building is constant. He's always churning.
And he sees things, too, Bob, that we don't necessarily see, okay? So And Jeff Howe, he wrote about this player, all right? It's a player they picked up, and you look at his stats, you go, fourth rounder, 2014. He played for the 49ers, the Texans, Bruce Ellington, and everybody's kind of, you know, mocking the fact that he claims to maybe have one good hamstring that works. There's something to that kid, all right? I followed him when I was with the Texans, and I liked what he was doing. Now he just gets injured a lot. If that kid can stay healthy, I think he could really, really help this team. His stats don't jump out. Nothing really maybe that's impressive about that. But when you do see him play, you can see flashes of a guy that can really, really excel at the slot position. So that's a guy that maybe a lot of people just kind of dismiss offhand, and I get that because the numbers don't say a whole lot about him. But that's a guy that Belichick sees something in that he knows can work for him.
And he saw it up close more than once. Enjoying practices a couple of years ago, and then the season opener last year.
And that's a great example.
2 years ago.
That is you just kind of said Belichick in a nutshell. He's evaluating all the time. Like, so he's at these joint practices. He's not just watching his guys. Mm-hmm. He's watching the opponent's guys, and he's watching how they do in one-on-ones and how do they You know, how do they, you know, interact with the players, you know, during timeouts and when there's nothing going on? He's watching and evaluating all the time. He never stops evaluating not only his own players, but the opponents as well.
All right, we'll continue our draft preview. Show number one, Jeff Howe from The Athletic joins us after this.
This is the NFL Draft Preview Show, presented by UMass Lowell on the home of the Pats, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Time to say goodbye.
Brady stands in, firing deep down the middle for Patterson. Reels it in to the post, and a touchdown, Patriots.
He is going to sign with the Oakland Raiders. Trent Brown, the former now Patriots left tackle who reinvented his career in New England as Tom Brady's blindside protector, is expected, in fact, to sign with Oakland.
Third down and nine, dropping back, scrambling away from the pocket. He's tripped up and he's dropped back at the 37-yard line.
No field goal.
Trey Flowers in pursuit.
Trey Flowers, the new pass rusher for the Detroit Lions, who signed a five-year Mega Millions contract to be the pass rusher for Detroit.
Time to say goodbye.
54 seconds to go. Edelman motions across the formation right to left. Shotgun snap. A five-man rush. A lob down the left side for Gronkowski. Makes the catch.
Got it!
As he lands inside the five. Able to reach up and make the grab over the shoulders of Eric Berry. And the Patriots have it at the four. Shotgun snap to Brady. Dropping back. Lobs a throw for Gronkowski. Left side. Makes the catch. Over two defenders. Tumbling to the two. First and goal to go.
Rob Gronkowski, the Patriots all-pro tight end, has announced his retirement Sunday after a nine-year NFL career. Gronk made his decision known in an Instagram post, time to move forward and move forward with a big smile, knowing that the New England Patriots organization, Pats Nation, and all my fans will be truly a big part of my heart for the rest of my life.
And we are back in our Town Fair Tire Studios on the NFL Draft Preview Show. Bob Soucy along with Ted Johnson, Tucker Silver producing that tear-inspiring, I guess, stirring montage with the music of Andrea Bocelli as we say goodbye to some of those Patriots stars of the past postseason run to a third championship in the last 5 years and a sixth overall. And we say hello to Jeff Howe of TheAthletic.com who joins us now. Jeff, how you feeling these days?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Ted and I opened the show by talking about some of the losses for the Patriots, Jeff, and you look at the roster right now, the way it's composed, the cap situation. They've got a couple of guys that are here that, or one of them who is here, and one of them we think is going to be here, and Tom Brady and Steven Gostkowski. And I'll start with them before we talk about needs they're going to have to address in the draft. In terms of addressing contract situations, any updates on those guys? And I'm particularly surprised that we haven't seen anything come to fruition with either Brady or Gostkowski.
More so with Brady than Gostkowski, because, I mean, it just seemed like such a layup. You know, you reworked that contract. I mean, if you gave him the identical two-year deal that he's currently finishing up right now, that, you know, tack on an extra 2 years in 2020 and 2021, you could have saved about $8 million in cap space in just, you know, this year alone. So that would have been a pretty good way to start off free agency. Maybe you're a little more flexible with some of those receivers you were chasing, or whatever, you know, you're trying to get accomplished there. With Gostkowski, I mean, I know they've been in contact for several weeks, but look, Belichick can identify a kicker. I mean, that's something that he has a very proven track record with. And if he looks at this draft class and says, hey, you know what, there are three kickers who might get drafted. I have 12 picks. You know, yeah, I think the world of Gostkowski, but if I can get a guy for 4 years and $4 million total as opposed to $4 million per, then, you know, that's the type of move that Belichick would make. So I'm not overly shocked that he's sort of taking this approach. Now, if he's really playing hardball with Gostkowski and he's identified this number that he would take Gostkowski back on, and he's just waiting to see if Gostkowski will kind of cave on what he wants in his side, then you know what, maybe things work out once he gets back from that tour that he's on. But, you know, that one's not all that surprising to me.
Hey, Jeff, it's good to talk to you. We were just talking about the wide receiver position, and it's a position I think sometimes Bills are reluctant to kind of draft high because of the learning curve it takes for those guys to adjust to the NFL game. But just, I mean, there's people that are linking the Patriots to maybe Deebo Samuel, wide receiver. I'm a big fan of David Sills out of West Virginia, Paris Campbell out of Ohio State. Is there anybody that you see in this year's draft, wide receiver-wise, that you think maybe is a Patriot type of player and that Belichick might use maybe with that first pick in the first round or one of his seconds in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question because, you know, that's the tough spot. That's sort of a blind spot for the Patriots and what they've been drafting over the last 20 years. I mean, every team has, you know, that one position that they just struggle to get their guy with, you know, whether it's, you know, misidentifying the talent or, you know, not knowing how he was going to adjust to the system or even, you know, a case of injuries with a Malcolm Mitchell. So I think there's going to be about a dozen wide receivers taken in the top 100 in the draft. I don't know if it's a top-heavy wide receiver class, so I'm not sure if there's a guy that I would, you know, rush to get at 32. But when you've got almost a half dozen picks right in that sweet spot a little bit later, you know, Friday night would be a really good time to go after one or even two wide receivers and just hope that one sticks in 2019 and you know, that the other one can sort of be more of a developmental project. I mean, if you can sign yourself up for that right now, I think the Patriots would take it just because of their history at the position as well as what the depth chart is looking like right now. I mean, Edelman is a clear-cut number one receiver, in my opinion, has been for 5 years. The depth chart's going to look a whole heck of a lot better if they get anything out of Josh Gordon this season, but that's what they're kind of hoping for. But, you know, it's as unreliable as it's always going to be an unreliable thing to kind of bank on. And then Philip Dorsett is a nice complimentary role piece, but, you know, you got to get younger there. You got to think about the future. You got to wonder how long Julian Edelman has left to play, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go at 32, but again, one or even two guys on Friday night, I think would be a worthwhile venture.
You know, Jeff, a lot of people believe the Patriots in this draft should go out and get a quarterback that they see as Tom Brady's heir apparent, the next Jimmy Garoppolo, if you will. I'm of the thinking that if this is not a rich class when it comes to quarterbacks, that if there isn't a guy that, you know, really stands out for them, that they're not going to reach high for a quarterback just to take a quarterback. But looking at the situation for them, what do they think of Danny Etling? Is there a quarterback that they're going to get, you know, outside of the top three who may not be available to them, who's going to be significantly better in their eyes than this developmental player they picked in the seventh round last year? And I think the same way, too, for that second tight end position, not maybe the pass catcher, but a guy like Ryan Izzo, for example. What do you hear about him and the impression that he made last preseason?
Well, I think Izzo, I'll start with him because I think he's an easier case. I think he surprised people in a positive way last offseason before the injury that put him on IR because he was such a good blocker. I mean, I think he was, you know, if he didn't get hurt early in the preseason, I think he would have given Dwayne Allen a real run for his money for that job. So if Izzo comes back and he kind of picks up where he left off, then you've got a quality blocking tight end on obviously a very minimal type of deal. So that's, you know, again, but at this stage in his career, you know, if you're coming off a rookie season when you're on IR, now you have to prove that you can be healthy. So that's just the big question mark there. In terms of Etling, I mean, they obviously liked him enough to bring him on every road trip last season. And that was one thing that stuck out. But if Etling is the long-term answer, I think that would be surprising. I'm not entirely sure they're really banking on that. But, you know, I'm a big proponent of you don't draft a guy unless you, especially in the first three or four rounds, unless you absolutely love him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that guy doesn't exist, fine. You know what? But I still think you want to take a guy on Saturday just to give Etling some competition.
Sure.
Because, you know, what realistically did we see? And when I say we, I mean us in the media last summer when we were watching Danny Etling. At best, the guy threw four passes in competitive drills a day. So there were some days when, you know, he wasn't even able to throw. He kind of got like the Jacoby Brissett treatment from a few years ago, in the sense that that third guy isn't going to get a whole lot of reps. So obviously things change during the regular season when they're behind closed doors and we can't watch much of practice at all. But even still, looking at that, and Ted could speak to this as well, you know, how much is that third guy really getting in terms of quality reps? I mean, those number one reps are going to Tom Brady. Ryan Hoyer probably gets a few every day. But, you know, they're not going to waste a whole lot of time on a guy who is on their practice squad just in the chance that he develops into a starter 3 or 4 years down the road.
Yeah, and the reason I ask is because I think that, you know, there's a difference between, you know, taking that quarterback with what you envision in him on day one or day two, as opposed to taking a guy to bring in for competition's sake, and a guy that you think is going to unseat Etling as that third quarterback developmental player. So maybe, you know, if they don't see a guy that really pops and a guy that they've already determined this is a quarterback we want on our team, then they're less likely to take somebody in the first or second round and more likely to take that guy on day three.
Right, I agree. And just looking at Etling, I mean, when they took him late last year, he didn't have a whole lot on his college tape that said, oh, you know what, that's the guy. I mean, that was – Danny Etling was basically the definition of a flyer. So they took him. They wanted to see what he could do in camp in the preseason. And, you know, he had that long touchdown run late in that preseason game. But it was, you know, what can you do throwing the ball? You know, can you manage the operation? Can all that stuff that the Patriots demand of a quarterback. But, again, making sure that he has competition for his job, there's nothing wrong with that. And at this point, because of where Tom Brady is at his career, you know, you got to draft a quarterback every year, whether it's the guy that you love in the early rounds or a guy's competition, and just hope that he sort of flourishes or surprises you in his first year or two. You know, you got to get somebody somewhere.
Hey, Jeff, do you think it's a foregone conclusion that Kyler Murray is the number one overall pick to the Arizona Cardinals? I mean, Cliff Kingsbury loves – we all know he loves him. We all know all the rumors of maybe Josh Rosen being on the trade market, maybe available for teams. Do you think it's just pretty much a done deal that Kyler Murray is picked by the Arizona Cardinals? And if so, what kind of NFL player do you think he'll make?
It's a good question because – So I think Kyler Murray, I mean, obviously a fantastic college player. I think going to Arizona would be a really good thing for him, because when you're talking about a small quarterback with, you know, a smaller frame, I mean, Russell Wilson is a huge exception in that. But when you get a smaller guy, you know, it's hard for a guy like that to succeed in the northern part of the country. When you're gearing up for January football, cold weather, you know, you want those big hands, the tight spirals. You know, it's hard for a guy. That's why you see, you know, mammoths who are always drafted in the AFC North. You know, it's been Belichick's style for 20 years. You know, with few exceptions, he wants a bigger type of player at that position. Because, again, you're talking about January football. So Kyler Murray going to Arizona in a controlled environment with the dome down there, I think would be, if he's going to have a chance to succeed in the NFL, I think that's a good spot for him. Assuming the organization isn't as, you know, horrific as it's kind of appeared over the past year, you know, you got to have this stability up top, you know, in the guys in the suits and everything. They have to help make it work as well. But I like the fact that he's going to be playing down south for a gifted offensive mind in Kingsbury. And it does seem like he's that number one guy. You know, one other thing I want to get off my chest, though, it's driving me crazy that the Cardinals want to trade Josh Rosen, because what is wrong with having competition? Why not have Rosen push Kyler Murray? I mean, why are you just going to draft him number one and give him the keys to the franchise? I mean, I get that's what you're doing when you select a guy first overall, but what if he gets hurt, or what if it doesn't, you know, pan out as quickly as they hope? There's nothing wrong with having another former first-round pick as your backup quarterback and seeing what sort of happens. I mean, you're putting all of your eggs into this one basket. It seems a little reckless, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree, especially when you consider the economics of it.
Got him cheap, right?
Without question,
yeah, exactly.
To me.
Got him cheap.
Jeff, the coaching situation. Ted and I talked a little bit about it in the opening segment as well. The turnover on the coaching staff, number one, how does that affect the Patriots? Number two, you got a lot of like-minded people now who are in this draft as well, in Detroit, Nashville, and Miami. What do you see as both the short-term and the long-term implications? Because player development, too, has been such a critical factor for this team. Finding guys in the mid to late rounds or as undrafted free agents who they are able to coach up and develop into quality NFL players.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, just looking at, you know, Chad O'Shea, losing him. I mean, Julian Edelman has said it for basically 10 years at this point that Chad O'Shea was the number one reason why, you know, he developed into the receiver that he is. And, you know, you look at a Josh Gordon coming in, the amount of hours that Chad O'Shea puts in with him or any new receiver, you know, any one of those quality veteran additions that the Patriots bring in sort of later in the process, whether it's, you know, late August or, you know, like a Michael Floyd type, you know, not all of them pan out, but when you talk about the hours that a guy like O'Shea puts in, the trust that Belichick and McDaniels have in him, and it goes right down the line. I mean, I mentioned O'Shea, but, you know, you can basically say that for any of the position coaches they've had or the ones that they've just recently lost. And the like-mindedness, I mean, that's why you look at the competition for an Adam Humphreys. I mean, it's no secret why Mike Vrabel, you know, values that slot position. He's seen what the Patriots have turned it into over the past 10 to 12 years. And that goes back even further with Troy Brown. So really over the last 20 years. And, you know, Matt Patricia going after Trey Flowers. You know, that's tough because of the amount of, like you said, the like-mindedness, the same sort of philosophies, the same value on positions that maybe other coaches didn't see or didn't have, you know, using the slot receiver position, I think is one way to do it. But, you know, there's obviously other tools. I mean, Trey Flowers, I was curious what his market would look like because, you know, you always wonder, is the GM smart enough to look beyond the sack totals? Well, when you've got a Matt Patricia and a Bob Quinn out in Detroit, you know, they know how valuable Trey Flowers is, despite the fact that his career high in sacks is 7.5. So they look at guys a little bit differently. And, yeah, I'm sure that's going to come back to haunt them to an extent in the draft as well because, you know, everybody knows, or those guys in particular, throw Bill O'Brien in there too, they know what Bill Belichick is looking for, and that's what they were taught to look for as well.
Hey, Jeff, great stuff. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Jeff Howell, TheAthletic.com, with us on the NFL Draft Preview Show.
Giving you in-depth coverage of the upcoming draft. This is the NFL Draft Preview Show with Bob Soucy and Ted Johnson. Presented by UMass Lowell on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Back to throw Manny. Look, shoots it long and deep and intercepted. Picked off by the Patriots. To the 5, and he's going to go down and in. Touchdown, spectacular return.
Fourth down, direct snap to Manning. Standing in there, fires to the right. Intercepted, Ty Law! His third pass interception of the game.
Ty Law, what a player.
Warner goes back to throw, and here's the blitz by Mike Vrabel. The pass is intercepted.
A football player that Ted Johnson. I'm really impressed with him. This guy is going to be one of the best inside linebackers in football. Ted Johnson here. He's the type of guy, he said, he always takes on with his right shoulder and then he just throws his body at that runner. And he has one of the biggest necks that I've ever seen.
The New England Patriots select running back from the University of Pittsburgh, Curtis Martin.
Martin. Boy, if he's healthy, he's real good.
Curtis Martin. 199 yards on 40 carries.
Curtis Martin able to break a tackle. Curtis Martin inside the 40, inside the 15, touchdown. 78 yards. Curtis Martin extends to a 20-0 lead for the Patriots.
Welcome back inside the Townford Tire Studios and our NFL Draft Preview Show. And I would attest to what John Madden said as well and agree. Ted Johnson has one of the biggest necks that I've ever seen. Of course, I work with Scott Zolak, who has one of the biggest heads seen.
That's so true. Literally.
Literally and figuratively. Yeah. Ted, it is amazing, though. Ty Law, 23rd pick, 1995 out of Michigan. You, number 57 overall out of Colorado. Mm-hmm. Curtis Martin, 74th pick in that draft out of Pittsburgh. two Hall of Famers sandwiched around a 10-year NFL veteran with three Super Bowl titles to his name.
Yeah, that was an incredible draft. I mean, little did I know at the time what it was going to maybe turn out to be, but I'll never forget my first experience in the NFL, my first practice. We're in one-on-ones, and so they bring all the rookies before they bring the veterans in back then in 1995. And I remember calling my dad after the first practice that night. And I was like, Senior, call him Ted Senior. Senior, I don't know about this NFL, man. I mean, they had me doing one-on-ones with this guy I've never heard of from Pitt called Curtis Martin. This guy was running me and turning me in circles. And Curtis turned out to be one of the greatest at all time at his position. So that was a great draft class. It was fun for me because Ty Law being a first rounder, I was fresh off of beating his Michigan Wolverines in a very famous Hail Mary play, Cordell Stewart to Michael Westbrook, and who was covering him? Ty Law. And I used to bust Ty's balls a little bit on that. He didn't find it so funny, but I loved all those guys. I mean, we had great, we had great production even from Jimmy Hitchcock, who was later in that third round, and Dave Wallaba became a starter in the fourth round from Syracuse. So all around, that was a really, really special class.
You were telling me a story off air about the draft lead up and being put not on the board, but on the wall of the stairwell by a coach who became a coach for the Patriots, but at that time was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it was funny. I was so at the combine, you're wearing your number with your name on it, and you're just it's coaches everywhere, front office people, scouts everywhere, and I'm in this big lobby of this hotel going to somewhere, and the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Bill Belichick, says, Johnson, come here, I want to talk to you. Brings me into the stairwell. So it's just him and I in the stairwell. And I'll never forget, he's sitting on a step, and I'm standing there. And he goes, all right, tell me about cover two. What's your reads? It's okay, when you're the weak side, what's your read? When you're the strong side, what's your read? The release of number one, what do you? And he just grilled me on cover two. And I'll never forget that. He was the only head coach that ever kind of asked me to kind of work on the board, if you will. So I was thinking, well, maybe I got a chance to go to the Cleveland Browns. Late, they had a late pick in that 95 draft. They went with a linebacker, but not me, obviously. Craig Powell out of Ohio State I'm not sure. His career. I don't think it didn't last very long. But I'll never forget Bill Belichick grabbing me in the stairwell and just grilling me on cover two.
You know, it's Bill, of course, had a chance to coach you for a long time though here in New England and lead you to and your teammates as well to three Super Bowl championships.
He also was on that 96 staff,
right, absolutely.
When we went to Green Bay.
Yeah.
When we played Green Bay, excuse me. And real quick, but I didn't mean to get you off your thought here, but that 96 coaching staff, this was the defensive coaching staff and that 96 team that played Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl. Our linebackers coach and D coordinator was Al Groh, the best. Al Groh's a phenomenal coach, the best I've ever had. Romeo Crennel was our D-line coach. Our secondary coach was Bill Belichick. And you know who our defensive assistant was? Dante Scarnecchia. So anybody on the defense that had a question about anything regarding that defense would go ask Dante Scarnecchia. So first-class staff. So I got to play for Bill actually in 96, as well as when he came here in 2000.
Right, that's amazing. That's amazing staff. As a player, and you watch the draft, you're in the NFL, but everybody knows it's all about competition. It's a meritocracy.
Absolutely.
And you got to earn your job every training camp. That's the reality for just about everybody. Some guys know they're going to be on the team. In your case as a player, and what do you think that the players right now that are kind of those guys that are by no means locks to be on the Patriots roster right now are going through? In your case, what was it like as the draft was unfolding and you were reading about various prospects, if you stay tuned to it, or you watched the draft itself and your position came up?
Yeah, I was always watching the draft. I was fairly lucky. I was a fairly decorated player early in my career, so I wasn't necessarily worried about my job, but I was always curious to see who they might bring in, and maybe because it always tells you what they're thinking, right? And depending on who they bring in. So I always watched the draft as a player and always wanted to see if they drafted anybody at my position for obvious reasons. And so there's a lot of guys. You're a bubble guy. If you're somebody that is kind of always had to fight and claw and scratch to keep a job on a roster, on a team, then you're going to be watching this through a different kind of lens. And so it's a very kind of nerve-wracking time. But guys kind of know the deal, too. Guys know that it's a very competitive league, that they're always trying to get younger, trying to get cheaper, always trying to bring in competition to kind of get the best out of you. So there's going to be a lot of players, whether they want to admit it or not, they'll be watching the draft. And I've told you this story, 1998 draft, the New England Patriots under Pete Carroll drafted in the first round, Andy Katzenmoyer, linebacker at Ohio State. And Andy was a very decorated player come out of college. Him and I ended up playing side by side. But it was a new coach and Pete Carroll, you didn't know what he was thinking. But I remember going, okay, all right, let's get it going. They're bringing in another linebacker. Let's get this thing going a little bit.
And his career, in great part because of injury, a cautionary tale that we ought to keep in mind every year at the draft, because you see all these highly touted prospects who go off on the draft board on the first round, and they don't materialize the way people expect them to. They don't become the stars in the NFL that many forecast.
You're right, Bob. And I remember this like it happened yesterday. I'm in the weight room the day of the draft. It was 1998, and Pete Carroll was on the treadmill. And Pete, nicest guy, nicest coach ever, nicest coach ever, sweetheart of a guy. He said to me, Ted, to be honest with you, the draft is truly a crapshoot. I mean, it really, really is. Now, that was what he was saying back in 1998. But there's so much more information on these guys now, more than ever. They like to do all these psychological profiles. At least the team that it was notorious for it were the Giants and the Browns. I think it's no coincidence that Bill Belichick had a connection to both of those teams. So there's also a huge, not only is the guy, can he play football, but how important is football to him? And there's more information and more data and social media interaction that you can really kind of, I think, formulate a stronger opinion on that player from a psychological standpoint. Psychologically, it is very important that you get the right player. It's not only how great of a football player is, but how committed is he to the game? Where are his principles? Where are his values lie? Is he a good guy? Is he a good team? Somebody you can count on? I just think there's more evidence out there that can help teams evaluate players better than ever before back in the early days when I was playing.
I think it's also important to note, too, Ted, that when we talk about, for example, the defensive end position, Trey Flowers, a lot of people say, and I'm guilty of it, too, the Patriots got to go out and find Trey Flowers' successor, the next guy to be him. Well, that next guy might have been drafted last year or the year before. That next guy might be Dietrich Wise. It might be Keyonte Davis, yep, who was brought in and, of course, last year saw playing time early in the season, only to be inactive for much of the latter part of the year. Maybe it's a Derek Rivers who flourishes this year for the Patriots. Maybe he's that guy lying in wait, chomping at the bit to fill that void.
Absolutely. And so that's where I look at, you look at Braxton Berrios and people, Braxton Berrios. Okay, watch what this kid does. Troy Brown got cut early in his career. Like, Parcells cut him. And then kind of brought him back and was like, are you ready to get, to play up to what I think you can? And it turned Troy Brown's head around and his career around. I mean, you see it time and time again, guys that you just kind of dismiss. We all just dismiss. Okay, Braxton Berrios. Okay, we'll see. All right, you want to dismiss him? We'll see, because I love the kid as a player in Miami. I think he's – so we'll see. And then you got a guy like Juwan Bentley. Watch this kid.
Yeah.
I think there's something special with this kid, all right? Before he was put on IR, I saw flashes of him where I'm like, whoo, this kid's. So trust that they know what they're doing. They know how to get guys prepared and get them ready for the NFL game. Unlike, they teach technique, they teach fundamentals, they teach these guys to be better football players than even they realize they can be. The Patriots can do that.
No doubt about it. Well, we'll try to be better than we were today next week at this time with our NFL draft preview show. Ted, it's great.
That was fun, Bob.
With you. Yeah.
Let's do it again next week, man.
Looking forward to it. And next week we will talk more about individual prospects and guys who might be fits for the Patriots. But our thanks today to guest Jeff Howe, kind of setting the table with the state of the Patriots as we look forward, of course, to the next couple of weeks previewing the NFL draft. Johnston and Flynn are coming up at the top of the hour. Michael Bryan as well, the headlines at 11 o'clock as well. Our thanks to producer Tucker Silver, and thanks to you for tuning in to the 98.5 The Sports Hub NFL Draft Preview Show. For Ted Johnson, I'm Bob Soucy. So long, everybody.
This is the NFL Draft Preview Show with Brock Sosi and Ted Johnson on 98.5 The Sports Hub.